was quite a lot registered for the tutorials, and now I think we are even less than before. I mean, not that it's a problem that we are less, I'm actually happy that we fit into the room. In case they are late, maybe somebody expects that it starts at 2:15, there are options also to go to another room. So maybe we move after 15 minutes if it's getting too crowded. But for the moment, I think it's fine. You are not at a table, but basically you have options to get one. Then another organizational thing, I have some, I don't know, good or bad news, depends on your working attitude. One of you asked me about the CP number for the lecture, and then I looked to the module guidebook, and I found out that this lecture is advertised not as 3+1, but as 3+2. So it was not my intention to deliver less exercises than expected from the module guidebook. I don't know why this happened, whether either they changed the guidebook during the years or I did it wrong already 6 years ago when I did it for the first time. To make it short, we need to find some solution that they are not only 45 minutes but 90 minutes tutorials each week. And I discussed with Alessandro, the guy in charge of the tutorials, and our suggestion is the following, that we keep what we agreed on last week and that we offer an additional 45-minute slots, which you don't have to attend if you don't want, but of course you are, I recommend to attend. And this is more for programming-specific issues. It's in the computer room, you can go there, you can discuss with him the homework before you have to present it here, you can get tips, so if you would have problems with programming, for example, you are rather a beginner in scientific programming, he's going to help you with programming, so it's more as an, what is the English word, German, it's auf freiwilliger Basis, voluntarily, is this the correct word? Is this a solution where you would be happy, or would you prefer to have 90 minutes homework discussion instead? This is also a possibility, but probably since we had problems even finding the dates last time, I suggest we stick as we had it before and just agree on one additional 45-minute slot, which is more meant as a preparation for homework and on assisting when you have problems writing your program code. I mean, just to get an idea who would go in this additional 45 minutes, which we have to offer according to the module guidebook, at least in principle. There are a couple of people who would show up. Okay, it's good to hear. Then we need to agree, of course, on a common day and date. So maybe those who have the feeling they are very interested in such a slot should now come up with proposals. The good news is the computer room is almost empty the whole week, so we have no constraint regarding the times. Alessandro and myself, we suggest Tuesday or Wednesday, because this allows you, when you get the sheet on Friday, to have a first look and try some programming or solving the sheet. And you can then discuss problems with him on Tuesday and Wednesday before you have to present it on Friday or the next Monday in the tutorial. So if we could find some slot on Tuesday or Wednesday, would probably be ideal. But in principle, if this is not possible, we can also move to other days. So those who are really highly motivated and expect that they will be there quite frequently should maybe come up with proposals, and then, as last time, we vote for the best solution.
Wednesday at 9.
In the morning or in the evening?
In the morning.
In the morning. Wolfgang Pauli, you know the name probably.
Yeah.
When somebody suggested to him to have a meeting at 9 in the morning, he said it's impossible because he cannot stay awake for so long. Good, but Alessandro said from 8 o'clock in the morning he will be available. Wednesday 9 would be a suggestion. Those who plan to go there, is this a good day or time for everybody? Until 12 for you, it's not good. So what would be your alternative preference?
Wednesday afternoon.
Maybe I just mark who the number of people who don't like the slot. So here is one objection. Wednesday, 2 o'clock, you. And you,
I have objections.
You have so two. What about later in the afternoon?
16.
4 o'clock. Would this be an option for everybody? 4 o'clock is a physics colloquium. In principle, everybody should be there. I mean, 500 people should be in the colloquium. This is the idea of a physics colloquium. So, 1600. Maybe not the best slot if you are going there, but on the other hand, you can go sometimes to the colloquium, sometimes to this tutorial. So who is against 4 o'clock? No one. You are? Because of the colloquium.
I would suggest maybe 12 o'clock or 13 o'clock. 12 or 1 p.m. on Wednesday. Because at 2 I also.
Is 12 o'clock fine for everybody? No one has any lectures or duties over lunch? You are from 13, that's only 1 hour typically. So if 12 o'clock. So again, for those who came late, I noticed in the module guidebook that we have to do 90 minutes tutorial, not 45 minutes. And as a solution, we thought about offering 45 minutes where you don't have to go, but where it's recommended to go. It's more meant as a preparation for the homework. Alessandro will be there, assist you with programming, give you hints how to implement things efficiently, and it's taking place in the computer room. So everybody's welcome to go there, but it's not required for the shine. So we are just trying to find out who is interested in going there and who has no time. So again, this seems like a good slot, 12 o'clock, Wednesday. Any objection? No? Oh yeah, very good. Then let's try it. So again, Wednesday at 12 o'clock. 1 o'clock. Computer room. It's on the first floor in the theory department 01120 and programming advice, help, etc. Alessandro. And yeah, everything else remains as we agreed last week. Now, still in principle, two of you could sit here and hear. I suggest we stay for the moment still in the room. Good. Yeah, then let's move on. This is what we have started last time. It was a big section about representation of numbers in computers and round-off errors, which is a very general topic for any numerical problem you're going to solve. You can have bad surprises if you are too careless here or if you don't understand the details how a computer is treating numbers. And I think the stuff we discussed was not too difficult, but still, let me repeat the most important equation. It's how real numbers or so-called floating point numbers are stored inside the computer. This you should really remember. It's a sign times a mantissa times 2 to the power of an exponent. And yeah, for example, for double, this is a constant. Where was it? Find it now. This is one bit. This was for double, which is typical 52 bits. And the exponent is 11 bits. And I cannot find it now in my notes, but basically this is half of the range which can be represented by the exponent. Then you can represent very big numbers and very small numbers. We discussed everything last time, roughly between 10 to the minus 300 and 10 to the plus 300. And the 52 bits give 16 digits in the decimal system. So this is a relative accuracy of computations with these double numbers. And this you should really understand. In particular, the relative error, which is due to the limited number of digits of the mantissa, and the biggest and the smallest absolute number, which depends on the number of bits for the exponent. I think we have a very nice exercise sheet today. Probably it was a rather simple sheet. I guess with your mathematical abilities, it was not really a problem to solve it, but still, doing it gives you a bit of a feeling what could happen inside a computer. And then the interesting stuff is, of course, to discuss typical examples where problems arise. And we discussed one thing, namely subtracting two very similar numbers. When you have two numbers which only differ in digits far behind the comma, then the leading digits annihilate and the accuracy is drastically reduced. This we discussed last time, and I guess you remember, and one can immediately see it according to this formula. Similar number means the exponent is exactly the same. Here you have the leading digits identical. By subtraction, they become zero. And the 16 digits, for example, for double, are then, of course, reduced. When, for example, the first 10 digits are the same, you only have an accuracy of 6 digits left. And subtracting similar numbers is something you're quite often doing in numerics. You need to do, and you're tempted to do it as precisely as possible. But as I said, when they are very similar, you don't do a precise calculation, you lose a lot of accuracy. And a very common example, and this we are going to discuss now in detail, is a numerical derivative. It appears in almost every numerical code, and it's a nice example because you can theoretically understand it very well, and it should serve then for you as an example which you always can recall when you have similar or even more difficult things to remind yourself what is going on and what you have to pay attention to. So from here on, new stuff, another example, numerical derivative. Finite differences. Okay, so the problem is we would like to have f prime of x and the starting point for our input is f of x. So the first question one could ask, why do I need finite differences? Taking the derivative is very simple. There are fixed rules. So whenever I have f, I can compute f prime and evaluate it as a function. Naja, it's not always possible. There are cases where f in numerics is tremendously complicated and where you don't have a closed analytical expression. For example, think like f is computed by very complicated numerical routines. For example, you first have to find eigenvectors of a huge matrix, and then you have to whatever find zeros of these eigenvectors, etc. Such a thing, of course, you cannot analytically derive. You cannot derive an analytical expression for f prime. You need to evaluate f, or for a finite difference, f twice at very similar points, and take the finite difference. And now the question is, how big should this finite difference be? Because there are two possible problems. Namely, when you take the finite difference too big, the approximation is of course bad. But when you take it too small, the numbers you have to subtract are too similar. And then you are running into the problem of round-off errors. So somewhere in between must be an optimum. And we would like to find out and study now what this optimum is. Before we do this, we'll compare two standard cases. So common choices for f prime of x are the following. First of all, let's remind ourselves to the Taylor expansion f of x plus h, h is a small parameter, is f of x plus f prime of x times h plus 1/2 f prime prime of x h square plus order h to the power of 3. We only need it up to second order. And then the two choices are f prime of x equal f of x plus h minus f of x divided by h plus order h. This is something which you can immediately see by using this thing here. Just plug in f of h, x plus h here, then the f is cancels. F prime times h over h gives the f prime, and the correction is the f prime prime term. It's not canceled. 1 power of h remains because h square is divided by h, and so this is just this order h here. And this has a name. It's called asymmetric derivative, asymmetric because you take the point and go in one direction here in positive direction, but you don't go in negative direction. And maybe a more fair treatment is a symmetric choice. It's f of x plus h minus f of x minus h divided by 2h. Again, you can plug in this equation twice, and when you do a similar analysis, you'll find that the error is only order h square. So the f prime prime also cancels, and those terms lead to the order h square. So this is already an important result by itself, because it strongly suggests to use the symmetric derivative whenever possible, not the asymmetric one. And now we will also discuss this issue of finding the optimal finite difference h, how big or how small we should choose it. And then we'll again discover that the second choice has an additional advantage. It can be evaluated much preciser. Perhaps it's already even a bit counterintuitive, because one might think here I have 2h, so the step size is bigger. Probably it's only a cruder approximation of the true derivative, but it's not the case, as we all see, or as we see already with this here compared to this here, and also in a couple of minutes when we have done a more detailed analysis. By the way, if you have printed out my notes before yesterday in the evening, you find a tremendous amount of sign errors. I don't know what I did. I must have been drunk. I would say there are more incorrect signs than correct signs. Now it's corrected, but if you're wondering why your signs do not agree with the signs on the board, then please print out the more recent version. Good. I said it already, but still, let's write it down because it's important. We have two problems. If h is large, then obviously order h in the first version, in the asymmetric one, or order h square in the symmetric one is obviously large, which is what we don't want. Or if h is small, then we subtract similar numbers. And this is also a problem we had already discussed last time. Was in section 231. So we would like to find the optimum here. Okay, so now, as I said, we are interested what is the optimal choice. Let's call it H opt. And now we have to investigate both error sources in more detail and choose H such that H opt minimizes both errors at the same time. So let's investigate both error sources. Relative error due to order h. And I should say we study now only one case. The other one you can do as a homework if you're interested in it. Are exactly the same arguments, only a little bit of different mathematics and numbers. Other than the case, so the relative error d due to order h is the following. Delta f prime of x is defined as the true derivative, this is what we would like to have, minus the estimated derivative, this is what we get. We have finite differences, and it's f of x minus, and now we just plug in our definition, the asymmetric one, and have minus f of x plus h minus f of x divided by h, and I think I forgot probably an order h something. You say stop?
Stop.
Here?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a f prime, right?
It's the asymmetric case, not the asymmetric.
Asymmetric, yeah. Thanks. And the order h prime is, no, it must be order h, otherwise it's wrong. I just plugged in this here. Got in my notes. Okay, and kriegst du die ganze Tafel da übrigens drauf? Ist es?
Ich habe jetzt weiter rausgesucht.
Ja. Noch nicht gehen, okay. Also dann versuche ich doch immer in der Mitte umzubrechen. Okay, so now what we do is some mathematics for f prime. We plug in now this in here, f of x plus h, in this term here. Then, for example, f cancels, f prime remains here, but cancels with this f prime, and what remains is a f prime prime thing. And, no, sorry, my notes were correct. F finite difference is defined as this expression, of course, without order h. It's what we compute here. So everything was good. So we plug in this expression here, and what remains after very straightforward mathematics is 1/2 f prime prime of x times h plus order h square. And this was only a preparatory step. Now, what we would like to have is a relative error. The relative error is typically a better description of an error than the absolute error. A relative error always means I divide the error by the total number. I mean, for example, when you have a millimeter and you have an error of 1 millimeter, this is a very big relative error. If you have a kilometer and 1 millimeter of error, this is of course very small. So delta f is typically not relevant, but delta f prime of x divided by f of x, this is what one calls relative errors. This is what is important for us. And now we plug in our result from this previous calculation, minus f prime prime of x over h divided by 2. And sorry, here I missed the prime again, divided by the derivative. And we are not too much interested now in a minus sign and a factor 1/2. So basically, this is behaving like the second derivative over the first derivative, which is probably also something order of 1 times h. So the power of h is probably the important behavior here. So jetzt wird's langsam wirklich zu voll. Also ich glaube, oder was heißt ich glaube, ich hatte schon, I switch to German for a moment, it's only about how we organize the room thing. Der Hilbertraum, der müsste jetzt, glaube ich, frei sein bis 3 Uhr und um 3 Uhr ist eine Übungsgruppe drin, die angeblich nur 16 Leute hat. Und wenn ich hier Bänke zähle, müssen ja 16 Leute problemlos reingehen. Also mein Vorschlag wäre jetzt, ich gucke ganz kurz, ob er wirklich frei ist, momentan der Hilbertraum. Dann ziehen wir um, bitten um 3, wenn diese Übungsgruppe kommt, ob die nicht hierher gehen würden. Wenn sie das nicht machen, müssen wir halt wieder zurückgehen, aber eigentlich sehe ich keinen Grund, warum die das nicht machen sollten. Also bleibt mal einen Moment hier sitzen, ich schaue jetzt mal kurz, ob es umsonst gehen. Okay, it's a moment, the Hilbertraum is free, and as I said, I think there are good chances that we can change. So let's try it and go there.